to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf on the We Made This Podcast Network. We are doing our Series 8 coverage, and I am your host for today's episode. My name is Mark Adams. With me at this time, as always, is Kurt North. Hello, Kurt.
Good evening, sir.
Good. And hello to Colin Jackson Brown, who's with us for the second week in a row. This is your last week for this run, though. Colin, hello.
It is. Hello. We're about halfway through the series.
We are.
Wait till this year's Smegups.
In fact, we are looking at Series 8, Episode 5, Crikey TV. And, Colin Wright, did you not want to do three episodes, or did you just get, like, the last pick?
I think it was the last pick, but I'm glad I chose last week's episode because
well,
I enjoyed
quite
that one.
But yeah, so we've split the guest hosts because it's an 8-episode series and it made sense to have all of Back in the Red in one go. So there was someone who only got to do 2 episodes where the other two got to do 3. Sorry, Colin.
It's fine. Less work for me.
Lavin wanted to do only the good. That's the reason why he's chosen 3. He's taken the baton to do the 3-part because he wants to talk about only the good.
But yeah, we're looking at Crikey TV, which was written by Doug Naylor and Paul Alexander and was directed by Ed Bye. It was broadcast on the 18th of the 3rd, 99, sort of, if you were British. But we covered that in our last episode.
I was. Still am.
I know, me too, unfortunately. 52% of us are racist, apparently. Oh, a little bit of politics!
Something happened there and I've completely had no idea what's just happened. Oh, right, okay. I'm with you.
Okay. Just explain it. It's not funny.
I just completely switched it off. I'm sorry.
Something happened, just Brexit.
Okay.
I'm still not over Brexit because I'm woke.
Tofu eating wokerati. That's what we are, apart from fuck tofu. I'll have some meat, thanks.
Ooh, I love tofu. Ooh, stir-fried tofu is the best.
What about a pair of women's breasts?
Stir-fried women's breasts? I mean, I know you don't meat, but Kurt, there's a fucking line.
Yay, cannibalism.
I mean,
I'm on a Yellow Jackets podcast. They haven't done cannibalism yet, but I believe they will be.
They've hinted at it.
They've hinted at it, yeah.
Just a bit they've fucking hinted at it. Did you get screeners for that?
Still waiting. So it's looking unlikely.
I want screeners for Chucky Vision.
Well, I need screeners so that I can get Colin on the bloody show. That's...
Do you think we can get screeners for the new Red Dwarf stuff when it comes out?
We can approach them. We'll have people on that network that have got access to people in the well, it's not the BBC, is it? But we've got people in the industry.
There's someone on the network that has worked on Red Dwarf, isn't there? So he may have contact.
Well, he worked on Back to Earth. Does that count?
It's Dave. It's Dave, true. So it's possible.
Anyway. So, yes, it opens with Crichton in the women's wing. And he's doing things like jump rope, painting his nails, and showering with an umbrella. And it plays, "Sometimes it's hard to be a woman." Which is a very good song. However, the naked Crichton gag wasn't funny the first time, wasn't funny the second time, and isn't funny this time.
I did quite like the bit where they're all painting their nails and he's painting his entire foot. That did make me laugh because that was stupid.
Yeah, that's fun, but naked Crichton, it was shit in Series 3.
I'm not necessarily like fond of naked Crichton, but melancholy Crichton I quite like. I like during the shower scene, he's kind of like, ugh, you know what I mean? And it plays up to that, you know, what am I doing here? You know, I'm bored and, you know. And the apathetic view of Crichton works quite well, I think, personally, at this point.
Yeah. I mean, this section at the start could be just boiled down to the joke is, ha ha ha, Crichton's a girl. Which,
yeah,
isn't that funny, to be honest? It's all right.
I think it was funnier in the 90s.
Yes, as many things in this particular episode were.
Let's come back to that.
Yeah.
The post arrives for Lister and Rimmer.
And that's the best bit. That's the best bit of the episode. The posts arrive and it's a wooden post.
That is a pun.
That's the joke.
It is a pun. Rimmer opens the mail and he's got death threats and something from Reader's Digest. He's won a holiday that he can't claim. He's also won the lottery. Lister has a letter from Peterson, who's found Lister's guitar and is sending it to him. Lister is pleased. Rimmer is fucking mortified. And beautiful deep cut. They refer to the Om song.
Did you notice, though, their opinions on the Om song have switched?
Yes, they have.
Rimmer was a big fan of the Om song in Time Slides, whereas yes, Lister was playing it down.
Rimmer was being facetious, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was like going, oh, I love the Om song. He was kind of being quite facetious about it. So,
and also, this Rimmer wouldn't have done that.
He wouldn't have known it yet.
Yeah.
You're right.
So yeah. He would have only accessed the Om song from probably Lister playing it to him in their quarters or something like that.
That's a very good point. He wouldn't have been backed up by Smeg and the Heads, otherwise known as Carcass.
And he wouldn't have met Craig Charles's brother.
Crypto-fascist.
The guitar arrives, but unfortunately its strings have been confiscated. There's also a letter that says that they can apply for a review.
Yes.
So the guard's outfit, considering Crichton was in inverted commas naked, the guard looks more like fucking Crichton than Crichton did in the last scene.
I think he looks like a black rib nobbler.
I didn't notice the guard's outfit at all.
He looked like Crichton.
He looked like a giant black-ribbed nobbler.
I ignored the joke the first time.
It had been found in the canal.
So, do we have permission to make these massive deep cuts now because they do so in Series 8? Is that what we're doing?
I think if people are still listening to a Red Dwarf podcast when we've got to Series 8, which they are,
Thank you, people,
for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
I think it's got to be the vast majority of people are going to know their shit about Red Dwarf.
They are.
They're going to get the references.
Yeah, and they're going to, and they definitely know more than we do.
Most of the time. Well, this is why I never ever read the Apple reviews.
They just tell you off for me and you off for swearing and being woke mostly.
I have heard that.
Okay, Series 8 is the. If I'm ever going to listen back to Series 8 and want to get really drunk, I'm just going to play a game to myself where the rest of my Shipwrecked and Comatose fan people say woke, and I'll get absolutely hammered.
Fair. It'll happen more in this episode, I'm sure.
It will. 2 days later, they're all returning from a Canaries mission. Crichton feels humiliated about being a woman in prison and particularly dislikes the showering. The men are agog at the idea, and Crichton thinks that they're frozen in time. And I've written one word in my notes. So I've got two sides of my notes when I'm narrating, for want of a better word. I've got the notes on what happens in the episode, and I've got my notes about what I want to talk about. I've written fucking Porky's in the right-hand side of my notes. This whole episode is like a horrible, horrible, shitty 80s film where just isn't it nice to perv on the girls? It's all harmless fun.
I mean, you say 80s film, but American Pie came out a few months after this.
I haven't rewatched American Pie for a long time, but I
it is very much based on exactly the same premise.
I don't want to.
No. Doesn't hold up at all in these days. But this is what I was thinking. So obviously we'll get onto it in a bit. But the main premise of this episode of getting Crichton to film the other women in the showers, I was thinking, was that something that we would have deemed acceptable and funny in 1999? And absolutely it was. Because American Pie, everyone I know or knew at the time,
the webcam
loved
scene.
It. That was it was so popular with pretty much everyone I knew. And that has really similar, there's a, you know, a woman being broadcast on a webcam masturbating to the entire school.
You see, not to appear as a right wing fascist.
Crypto fascist.
Up until this point, I don't have a problem with this at the moment because I think it's fine. I actually think it's absolutely fine. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Yeah.
But it's the actual filming and doing it.
Yeah. Because at the moment, you've got Crichton basically saying, oh, look at this. Again, the apathy of him. He's kind of going, oh, whatever. Meanwhile, you've got people who are sex-starved going, oh, fucking hell. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That I don't have any problems up to this point. And it's, even when Holly says, you know, sometimes it's actually, you know, it's right now that I feel it's good to be ahead.
Yeah. You know,
so up until this point, I still don't have a problem with this episode.
I agree. But what I'm saying is this particular scene is very much like the setup to something that will happen in a film like Porky's. And it could have gone a different way, but
right. Okay, I didn't get the reference to Porky's because I was like, "What are you talking about, Porky Pies?" Well,
Porky's that bloody awful rapey. Anyway,
I've never seen whatever you're talking about, TV movie or
Let's
whatever.
Let's not have me that, say so. The word rape again. That bloody awful film from the 80s that was just moving on. And you're right, it's actually Kill Crazy that suggests that they film it. It's not one of the main cast, and Rimmer kind of sort of calls him out, but it's not for the moral reason, it's because of the appeal. So he does call him out, but probably wouldn't have done if he wasn't thinking that they would be able to get out of there. So it doesn't really count.
It's also totally believable that Kilcrazy, who was a virgin that had never seen a naked woman and had been locked up in prison and since he was quite youngish, would, you know, that's what his views would have been. That, you know, that is fairly realistic, despite him being an absolute cartoon character.
Yeah, yeah, and because the question mark is on the cat as well, isn't it?
Yeah, the cat.
Because the cat's like totally on board with it.
Cat always has been, but
he's also a virgin.
Yes, exactly. Cat has always been pretty misogynistic. Because he's a cat.
There is an element of being able to kind of precariously justify a less evolved attitude from a cat, but it's not good. And Crichton decides to not do this and protect the women, which obviously he would do because he's programmed not to be a cunt.
Yeah.
Which again, having go up until this point, having that as a counterpoint works. This whole thing, everything in the first 9 minutes of this episode, absolutely is fine, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because the calling it out, they are kind of thing. Rimmer, yes, okay, we've had him in previous. We talked about this last week in that Rimmer is the old Rimmer. He's not the hologrammatic Rimmer that we've seen before, or the many alterations of him. There's a tipping point. In that bit where he's like, I'm all in favour. That bit, okay, you know, that's the tipping point, I think. Yeah, that's where it kind of goes, okay. And that's where it falls apart.
The only characters that I'm disappointed in this episode are Lister and Rimmer, particularly Lister, because he should know better. Rimmer hasn't evolved past that point in his personality yet.
Yeah.
And Cat and Kilcrazy definitely haven't. And Crichton is, at least to start with, as much of a victim as the others are because it's totally against his will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crichton's definitely a victim. You're right. Ackerman has everyone lined up, and it's because someone has stolen his glass eye. He demands its return and presents a bucket and turns off the lights for 10 seconds. It's not returned, and he's angry because he's going on a date.
Can I just question something in that section? Mm-hmm. Is he wearing an eye patch, or is that supposed to be a massive hole in his face where his eye's missing?
I've always assumed it's just an eye patch.
Yeah, I thought it was an eye patch.
Right, because the first time I watched it, I thought it was just a hole in his face. I was like, that's way too big for just an eye. But yeah, it's an eye patch. I think you're both right. I was watching it on a fairly small screen.
Rimmer dobs in a big bloke who had stolen the eye, and Kachansky tells him off and says it, and says that it's basically suicide, but Rimmer points out that it'll help the appeal. He then gets a massive kick in from all the other inmates.
Which he gets a lot. He's used to it by now.
Crichton picks up some rubbish and throws it away. He's ambushed from an air duct and knocked out with a spanner. He's then kidnapped and injected with something. He feels...
reprogrammed.
He's quite human here. I don't think you could knock out a robot with a spanner. And what's an injection going to do to a robot?
Yeah, the injection's a bit weird. I think there's precedence of him being knocked out by things in
he got thinged in the first episode when he was like, when he was taking him hostage in the toilet. There was something that they injected into him there.
Perhaps there's some kind of like socket thing on his neck that's not that obvious.
Okay.
I am speculating here.
So we switch.
I'm trying to think what could break off.
It doesn't matter.
Maybe it's some electrolytes or something like that that breaks down. I don't know.
So we switch to black and white footage of an old B movie with a wonky flying saucer. It's a trailer for Attack of the Giant Savage Completely Invisible Aliens. And it's a trailer on the inmates' film night.
I want to see that film.
I do, but they clearly made this trailer from scratch. And my question is, why? Why couldn't they have just found some footage of a similarly ridiculous film? Because they do exist.
I think just for the joke of like when they pointed at the invisible alien.
Yeah. Also, did you know that one of the men in the trailer is Doug Naylor?
I did.
It's the only time to date that he has ever appeared on screen in an episode of Red Dwarf.
Brilliant.
He's not the main guy. He's I think he's the third one along when there's four blokes standing together.
Huh.
So yeah, but yeah, it's blatantly a Plan 9 from outer space,
yeah,
sort of parody, because you've got the flying saucers look near enough identical to how they look in that.
Yeah,
weren't the kids the sons or something like that as well? Or am I thinking of a later season? I might have read that somewhere. I haven't reread my notes for a while, so, but I'm sure it might be someone's kids as well.
Hmm.
There were kids in it.
Yeah, there were kids in it.
Didn't see any information of who they were.
Lister, Kat, and Rimmer are attending film night with the other male inmates. And Kat and Rimmer complain about the quality of the films that are shown. Suddenly, the broadcast is interrupted by Crichton, who has hacked the screen. He's advertising a live pay-per-view screening of the women's shower room.
The problem is, if you continued on the track at the beginning of the episode that they were going to call it out more than they did, then there's a bit more premise to it.
Yeah,
it's going back to what you're saying, like the Rimmer and the Lister characters. It's kind of like, yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. But they don't call it out enough.
And they don't. They sit there and, well, as soon as they're about to go, until Crichton announces that Christine Kachansky is going to be the next person on it, and then they sit and watch. Before that, there is... I did quite like the idea that Crichton then looks at a cracked floor tile
pay-per-view.
Until people have paid enough, because it's a pay-per-view event. I thought that was quite clever, but... that was the last clever bit in the episode, I think.
It just feels to me that this is typically the fuck-awful 90s premise, where trying to make things funny suggests that misogyny and creepy shit is harmless, and it really fucking isn't. And, but the, you know, I work in British wrestling, unfortunately, when you have friends who are relatively high-profile, famous to a... certain niche, you know, you probably wouldn't recognize some of my friends walking down the street because you're not wrestling fans. But for wrestling fans, a lot of the people I know and I'm close to are actually bizarrely kind of niche famous.
Yeah.
You get sex tapes. You do. There have been videos of friends that have been revenge porned, and someone, another one that unfortunately was a friend of mine who sold footage of himself doing sexual acts to a porn site that was ripped and then put elsewhere, etc., etc. Do you know what I didn't fucking do?
Watch it.
I did not watch my friend's fucking porn. I did not watch, without permission, these things of my friends that I could have easily had access to.
Because I'm not a cunt. But that's what I'm getting at. It's not fine by any stretch of the imagination, but it again, it's the tipping points that it's just, you know, it's you know, it's very dangerous subject matter anyway to even start talking about it and to put it on screen. But the tipping points are those two moments with Rimmer saying, "I was all in favour," and then Lister and Rimmer coming back and watching three smegging hours of it.
Here's the thing.
Also, I have fairly long showers, but not three fucking hours.
I have fairly long wanks, but not three fucking hours.
That makes it even worse, because you've got, like, they must have just had Crichton in there for 3 hours and just the amount of people. Now, yeah. I did say I would mention this, because my other half told me to mention this, that it is the actual part is completely, what's the word? Disingenuous. To the women, because there's no way in hell's chance would they drop a towel on the floor.
Yeah.
that's the first thing she said. She was like, no way in hell am I going to be dropping that towel on that floor. It'll be put up nicely. It'll put on a rail.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's also really obvious from the way this is written that there was no input from any women at all.
Mm.
Chloe Annette was actually... she was unable to attend regular recording sessions for this episode. She'd got a kidney infection, which is why there's a lot of the episode that she's not in. She actually disappears midway through a scene in the suicide mission bit partway through.
Right.
But yeah, there's... it's really... I think if there were just one bit of input from a woman in the writing process, this could have gone very differently.
Mm.
But
yeah,
the fact is, it was all a big boys' club thing at the time.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the misogyny just went completely unchecked. And the episode is all the worse for it. This is probably the worst episode of Red Dwarf I've seen. After the episode yesterday was really fucking... last week was really fucking good.
I don't know. I deeply, deeply dislike this episode, but I do think the stuff in Back in the Red is worse. But it's close. And I think I want to make it very clear that, you know, I am quite a kinky person. I have watched...
You've never mentioned it,
I have watched pornography with my friends in. When I was told explicitly, would you like to watch me doing this? Yes, please. You know, and that's the fundamental difference. It's even touched upon later in the episode. I'd have shown you my boobs if you'd asked. And, you know, I've got friends that I absolutely would not consent to watch videos of me shagging. But I also have friends that I do and have shown videos of me shagging to, you know? But you're right, it really is. I don't want to at any point suggest that we are prudish, because we're not. But consent is the sexiest thing in the world.
Yeah, and there's none of it in this whatsoever.
Not a jot.
I'd say it could be. That's what I keep going back to. That there's certain things that you like in this episode, but it could be progressive. It tries to be progressive and just does going by checked by drafts or whatever.
Mm.
You know, it's just not. It's that tipping point. It's that kind of like you're trying your best. You're seeing that you're seeing the issue. It's not like you're just putting something out there and it's happened. You are actually physically in script saying stuff in here that, you know what I mean? It's like, what aren't you getting? Why is the balance left, you know, more on one side than it is on the other? When you clearly know in your head that it's wrong what's happening. And yeah, to add drama to it, that to have the, I can understand why they wrote the Lister character the way that they did, so you can get the conflict between, you know, Kochanski and Lister. You've got to have conflict in a TV show. You've got to have conflict in a script. But you not to completely fundamentally change a person's character for start off. That's the issue. That's the issue. And last week we talked about Cassandra being like a Star Trek episode. You know, you've got the opening story, you've got you know, the premise, the kind of the conference room, then you've got the adventure, and at the end, what we've learned, or the theory, or, you know, the concept behind it.
Mm.
You don't get that here. There's you get some of what should have been learned in the first 8 minutes. It should be at the end, you know, and everything in between is the problem. So, but yeah, we're not prudish by any stretch of the imagination, Mark. You know, I mean, that GIMP outfit that you sent me the other week was certainly interesting.
Have you been going through my sex drawer?
I have. It's been quite enlightening.
So you've met...
As if you're implying you've only got one sex drawer. You've got a fucking whole unit.
Wait, you've met Average Joe and Big Joe... Fucking hell. I've forgotten the name of my dildos. Average Joe and Big Jim.
I've actually physically just been tangled.
Average Joe and Big Jim. I love those names. They're the best names for dildos ever.
Dildo Daggins.
Dildo Daggins? Do you own Dildo Daggins? Is Dildo Daggins?
No, but you is can that, use that name.
Is that Thing Daggers Dildo?
Fucking hell, Keith Dagger.
Keith Dagger's Dildos, Dildo Daggins.
Talking about dildos.
Oh, you've got to do like a wordplay on that. It says, Dildo Daggins.
Talking about dildos, I was in Clone Zone, this gay sex shop, the other day, and I saw this dildo that was fucking magnificent. It had a handle and a suba. It was a dick sword. And when you think about it, when you're using a dildo, a handle, really fucking useful. So, I want a dick sword, is what I'm saying. I'm going to save up, but I'm going to buy a dick sword.
But not 8mm dick swords, surely.
8mm? That's like...
Have you seen 8mm, the film?
No.
Where they're forced to have sex and actually use an actual, bladed instrument.
No, I've not seen that.
That doesn't sound like a good plan.
No, but no. An 8mm dildo snuff movie wouldn't touch the sides on me. I've been gay for 25 years.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know you were gay.
I know, right?
You never mentioned it.
Smeggle.
I was just about to say something about the...
It's more Smeggle.
Penis mightier than the sword.
Wow. the Smeggups on this episode.
The peen.
Smeggups.
That one works better written.
A blinged up Crichton is on the phone and a guard brings him a visitor. Lister tells Crichton that he knows how to get his programming sorted after Kilcrazy reprogrammed him. Crichton refuses because he's rich and powerful now. Kochanski enters and he gives her a gift, a waterproof pogo stick. Lister says he can't let Crichton do this, and Kochanski asks what.
Yeah.
It just feels clunky as fuck. Like I say, it feels like a Porky's film.
Oh, yeah, Revenge of the Nerds as well.
Revenge of the Nerds is worse than Porky's.
Yeah.
But later on in the scene, there is something that I do want to say is pretty good. So Lister shows her a photo of Shower Night Live and Crichton Scarpers. Kochanski turns on Lister, quite rightly, for watching it. But she's actually pretty reasonable and then tells him that they're no longer friends. What I thought was, the way Kochanski dealt with it was remarkable. She was calm but clear, explained what he'd done wrong, and explained what the consequences of his actions were. And that was actually pretty well done. And I really respect the character, the actor, the writing for that one very brief period in this episode, I think.
I don't think, other than the cottage cheese with pineapple in it, I don't think that this version of Kochanski has put a single foot wrong.
No.
In the entire time she's been in it. She's been an absolutely brilliant character.
Yep.
And she's been the saving grace of some episodes in this series and the last one. I do like you were saying before, I think it's a massive, massive shame that Chloe Annette has done this Crime Traveller and a few other things and then just hasn't done much since then, because she's absolutely fantastic.
I think I will genuinely miss her when we go into the Dave stuff. And I think it's very, very sad that they basically cut her in Back to Earth. And
doesn't mean she didn't have to be in Back to Earth.
But
well, she is in Back to Earth.
She's there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a flashback.
Yeah, yeah. But so, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting seeing Red Dwarf without Kachansky again. But I wouldn't have gone into the Dave stuff thinking like that if I hadn't been doing the rewatches of series 7 and 8 for this podcast. I think I completely and unfairly kind of dismissed the in inverted commas second Kachansky just because she was the second one. And it basically in one episode, she gets more screen time than Claire Grogan ever got. And Claire Grogan was hot with a Scottish accent, and that's about it, actually. Chloe Annette is a revelation as Kachansky. And yeah, you're right, one of the biggest strengths of Series 7 and Series 8 is Kachansky and or Chloe Annette playing that character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rimmer enters the quarters with files for their appeal. Lister is writing Kachansky a letter of apology with his gift of 2 bags of flour. That's quite a good gag.
Really? Really?
I quite like that.
I thought it was terrible and it got a fucking round of applause.
I think it's class. I think it's a class joke.
I just thought it was way too obvious.
It was flour, flowers and a bag of self-raising. The entire joke is brilliant.
Mm.
Fair enough. I didn't like the fucking dance bit with Blue Midget in the
That's the best bit
earlier either.
That's the best, well, I that's didn't the best either. Bit of Back in the Red. But then again, a kick in the would be better than fucking anything and Back in the Red. Rimmer admonishes him for trying, and Lister talks about how tough it is to have unrequited feelings for someone. Which, yes, it is. Doesn't mean you can watch her in the fucking shower.
Yeah.
Crichton arrives, having been rumbled and kicked out and reclassified as a man. But he hasn't been reclassified as a man for the rest of the series either. Which is annoying.
Well, because he's playing up the joke. He's playing up that he's been reclassified as a man. He's not being reclassified as a man.
It's part of the ruse. It's part of the ruse for the next bit of Crikey TV.
Yes, you're right.
The guards don't seem to do very much. It's quite a low security prison.
Because yeah.
So, I mean, the movie night itself with absolutely no supervision.
So, yeah, so if you're right that he hasn't been reclassified as a man, this is basically a woman coming into a men's. Yeah, you're right. This is makes no sense. I didn't even realise that it makes no sense and that it's fucking got plot holes, because I wasn't concentrating on the plot holes. I was concentrating on the fucking Porky's shit.
It's purely to do the Jeremy Beadle Lister.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That's what the whole thing, the whole ruse is about. Which then brings my favourite part of this episode.
Go on.
This bit on the balcony you're about to talk about.
Okay. Crichton and Lister are chatting on the balcony, and Crichton tells him that Kachansky is back with her ex, Tim, and he's taking her on a date tonight. Lister's very upset.
Brilliant. I just love, because I'm guilty of it, the fact that Crichton's not telling him what it is. You mean you've not heard about what's happened with your thing and my boyfriend, Tim? You've not heard about Kachansky and Tim? You mean you've not heard? Just the rampantness of that continually going on and on and on and on. Yeah. It's totally my wheelhouse.
And you also love neurotic Crichton as well. So the bit at the end, it's so unfair, is very your thing as well, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I love this scene. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. And
just riles Lister up and it's brilliant. I like it.
Lister goes back to his quarters and Holly offers some peculiar advice.
What I will say, by the way, just because I noticed it yesterday, sorry to interrupt, but you've got Rimmer in the background just sitting there. Did you notice in the scene?
He's working.
They're on the
He's working on the appeal.
Yeah, but I just like the fact that he's just sitting there. He's just like, just chilling.
Rimmer gives Lister the worst case situation of Tim and Kachansky were getting back together. Crichton says he wants Lister and Kachansky to get together and have babies. Crichton comes up with a plan to sabotage the date, leaving an onion sandwich and Rimmer's Morris Dancing Monthly, Y-fronts and Christian Rock CDs in Tim's quarters.
That's mine.
The Christian Rock CD seemed a bit weird. I mean, yeah, it'd be a really embarrassing thing for people to find, but...
That's mine.
Christian Rock belonging to Rimmer.
Yeah, it should be Hammond organ, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, that Hammond organ might be too obvious, but he's never displayed any, you know, Christianity throughout any of the other series.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to listen to bloody MXPX or Creed, if you can help it, if you're not Christian, because you don't want to, you know... there was a band called Delirious who I think I heard one song of once and it was like, oh, they're all right, apart from all this God stuff they're singing about.
Is Evanescence Christian rock?
Evanescence came from a Christian rock background and tried to deny it their whole of their at least start of career. But I they like definitely Evanescence. Started out like that.
Like the good, like the good ones.
Wake me up!
Wake me up inside. Yeah, that one.
So, anyway. Well, you two, the three of the U2 members were in the Church of Shalom. Originally, it was quite culty. Right. They eventually got away from, but it was that almost broke the band up early doors. I know a lot of people were shouting "Hooray!" at that point, but
well, we wouldn't have had actually... one good song if they'd broken up that early. The one on the Batman.
It's Batman one of my. Song. I mean, I can't argue it's one of the best U2 songs. I do think it is one of the best U2 songs. So.
The Batman song.
I love that tune. I do love that tune. Hold me, kill me, kiss me, throw me. Hold me, throw me, kiss me, kill me, even.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a great tune.
And I just like the really early stuff.
Yeah. Discotheque's okay. We always do this, talk about the Batman song. We've been doing this a long time. Anyway, yeah, there's also a pair of scissors, which is Crichton's pièce de résistance. Lister comes out of an air duct into Tim's quarters using directions from Crichton, who's bribed the guards. He leaves all of the shit out in Tim's room, scatters crumbs in his bed, and trims his pubes, adding them to the bed and to the soap. Finally, he leaves a leaflet about venereal diseases out in the front room.
On his pillow, isn't it?
There's a weird cut here, right? Just before he cuts his pubes off, there's a scene where his jacket is completely wide open, and then the next scene it's like closed again. So it feels like they've done quite a few different cuts, and it's quite an obvious blooper, like a continuity thing.
It's disgraceful! His jacket was open, then it wasn't.
Yeah.
How could they get away with that?
Dear BBC, were you aware that...
Yeah. I can only imagine that it's something to do with the pube thing, that they've maybe recut it a different way. Because originally...
Recut the pubes.
So it cuts to film night, and Lister is being broadcast rather than the film. Crichton explains, in a Jeremy Beadle chin-strappy-type wig thing, that it's a rib... And it's actually Ackerman's quarters. Lister has been crited on Crity TV. Rimmer panics about the appeal and shoots off into the ducts. Crichton explains that Ackerman is due back in his quarters any minute now. Credit where credit's due. There's some plot holes in this, but the whole establishing the glass eye because he's going on a date thing makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, they've set up some things earlier on that pay off. Later on.
Yeah.
I mean, handing a pube to your friend isn't exactly the best thing to do in the world, is it? But
no.
The putting them right in Rimmer's hand. That was very funny.
Did you ever watch The Word?
Yes.
I was too young for The Word. I've watched clips of it in recent years on YouTube and stuff.
There was a section on that where I think it was called I'll Do Anything to Get on TV.
Yes.
And someone ate their own pubes on a cream cracker to be part of that segment. And I'm just like, no, I don't want to eat my own pubes. Would you or eat anyone your own else's? Pubes to go on telly?
No.
No.
No. If you would eat your own pubes to get on telly, let us know at Red Dwarf Pod.
We'll set up our own YouTube channel, and by all means, go for it.
Lister and Rimmer do a clean-up as fast as possible, and like we say, they nearly forget the pubes. They manage it, and then, as they leave Ackerman's quarters, chase after Crichton. The viewers at film night applaud wildly.
And then it stops.
The appeal comes back, and it was successful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lister can have his guitar strings back. Rimmer had thought it was a chance to appeal their sentence and get out of prison. Lister offers to write him a thank you song.
It's like the most rushed ending that they have ever done. It's completely like they've run out of time.
You've got some interesting things to see in later seasons.
Yeah, fair enough. But there's absolutely no conclusion or redemption.
No.
That's what I was saying about the beginning, wasn't there? There was no redemption at all.
As far as we know, Crichton is still reprogrammed. That we never find out about that being fixed.
I can understand that, though, because they've chased after him. So you can just imagine that they've probably got hold of him, reprogrammed him. So I can imagine that happening.
Kachansky is still angry, rightfully so, and betrayed. And after the scene where she finds out, yes, fair enough, she was ill, so couldn't have been there for the whole time. But they did refilm, the scenes that she was in were filmed at a later date, so they could have filmed other ones with her at a later date.
Mm. Yeah.
She's completely fucking abandoned and ignored.
Yeah.
And it's disgraceful. It's fucking horrible.
And they're all mates again in the next episode?
Exactly. It's completely forgotten. And that wouldn't fucking happen. You know, can you imagine any of your sort of female friends being, you know, totally okay with it again, you know, a week later?
Even like in Star Trek, when they've gone through like a massive like PTSD stuff and it goes reset. You know, you can understand that from an episodic point of view, but they never leave it in conflict.
No.
They never leave it in conflict. Resolve it at the end.
Yeah, it gets resolved somehow by the end of it, yeah. And there's no resolution, so.
Well, I think the problem is it's such a fucking horrible thing that they've done. How would you fucking resolve that?
Mm. Yeah, I just don't see how anyone could or should be friends with anyone who has done that to them. Like Kachansky said, we're no longer friends. And then the next episode, it's happy, happy, joy, joy, lol, 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 dinosaur. And it's like, come on.
I think the only way we can reconcile this is to just imagine that this is a parallel universe that they've shown us for one episode, and it didn't actually happen in this universe, and that's not the characters that we're following for the rest of it.
I mean, as headcanons go, I'm down with that.
Yeah.
It's just
it's the only way to fucking reconcile it.
It's just fucking appalling. And like I say, the only good thing is the way Kachansky handles it, and then that's completely forgotten and retconned in the next episode.
I would definitely say, like, as much as like I've played devil's advocate to a degree, this is the worst episode of Red Dwarf so far for me personally.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
As someone who likes Series 8 as well, and there's like that's what I was saying before about the really high highs with some of the fantastic funny moments that I remember quite well and fondly. To be fair, there has been dents put into it. What going through it like this? Because like, oh, for fuck's sake, I can't believe they did that. And I am a little bit more forgiving than some. But I'm not surprised by that in the way that I lean more left centre than yourselves do anyway. But at the same time, it's kind of like, oh, for God's sake, I didn't realise that. And it is that peaks and troughs. But this is by far the worst episode of Red Dwarf.
I think it's unforgivable, this episode. And I think the stuff in Back in the Red is also unforgivable. And I'll be honest, that's what has tainted me toward... You're right, there is some very good, funny stuff in Series 8. But the more we talk about it, the more I think that there is no way that this can be anything other than my least favourite season.
Yeah. It's so weird, though, to think that this didn't fucking occur to us at the time.
Yep.
Or certainly didn't occur to me and most of my friends at the time.
And we were adults. We weren't teenagers. We were adults when this was broadcast.
I was 17 when this came out.
I was 20.
Yeah, yeah. So you weren't a teenager. Rest of us all
were. We were teenagers, mate.
You know
we're
what
teenagers.
I'm getting at.
But even for the next few years...
We were legally able to have sex. We were basically grown-ups.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it wasn't seen as anywhere near as bad as it is now. And we've grown since then. We've fucking improved, which is good. But it does make me wonder, what the fuck... in 20 years' time that we look back on now that we're doing wrong at the moment when we're trying the fuck not to.
Can I make a suggestion? And you're not going to like it.
Okay.
It's eating meat.
Potentially. Could be.
And to be honest, it's
I'll
eating
sort that
dairy.
Out when I come to it.
It's eating dairy, which I also do. I'm hardly fucking perfect. But have you tried oat milk in your tea?
I don't think I'd survive if I didn't eat meat. I don't eat anything else.
I may well look back on this in the future, but yeah, I'm sticking with meat at the moment. Sorry, vegetarians.
Moving on to the commentary very briefly. Again, there wasn't very much that I picked up. Craig confirms what you said earlier, that Doug visited him in prison and got the inspiration for this series.
Yeah.
The Kachansky news scene where... he doesn't tell him what's happened was basically not scripted.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating because it was done so well and really organically. And I think it probably benefited from that. And 20 years ago, because I think it was around 2004, 20 years ago, Chris Barry described the cast as middle-aged.
So they're 3/4 aged now.
And what really bothers me is they were about our age. Craig Charles was 40. He confirmed that in one of the other commentaries. I'm like, fucking hell. Yeah,
40 is definitely middle-aged.
Are we
mate?
Really middle-aged?
We're middle-aged. How old do you reckon we're going to get to?
At this rate.
Christ. I'm way past middle-aged.
You have an existential crisis?
I don't want to be middle-aged. That's what old people are.
Do you know what?
What?
It's better than not getting there.
True. Very true.
That's what you got to think.
Well, this was a bleak episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ending in my existential crisis.
Next time there's dinosaurs.
There is. Well, dinosaur.
Yeah.
Pete. He's never eaten me before.
Brilliant. Right, so that is the end of our discussion on, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, the worst episode of Red Dwarf ever.
Yeah,
so far.
Oh, fuck, there isn't something worse than this, is there?
If you look at Ganymede and Titan's list, then yes, there is.
Great. Yeah.
Anyway,
probably
be fun
not,
when
not,
we get
not
to
for
it.
The same reasons, though, but yeah. There's,
so then yeah. I probably won't think it's worse then, will I?
Probably not.
We'll find out when we get there.
Before we go, Colin, where can people find you? On that there internet.
So on Twitter, you can find me at Mogwai Fear Satan. I've got two other podcasts, both music-based. We Dig Music, where me and my friend Ian and my friend Tracy choose 10 songs each from a different year and then argue over which ones are the best. And then we've got another podcast where me, Ian, plus a different guest each month, which... all of my esteemed colleagues from Shipwrecked and Comatose to have appeared on at varying times in the future. No, in the past. Possibly in the future as well.
Oh, the present.
and the present, yeah. That's called Free With This Month's Issue, where we listen to old free CDs from Kerrang! Enemy, Metal Hammer, that kind of thing. You can find both of those on WeDigPodcast.com or just by searching their names. You've got Google. Do that.
Kurt, where can people find you on that there internet?
Linktree, linktr.ee/rmuldrake, rmuldrake. It has all of what I'm up to at the present time because it could be everywhere, all at once, basically. So,
I mean, you are a podcast whore.
I am a podcast whore. I am the Micah Richards, and that will completely go over Mark's head of podcasting.
And if you're looking for me, it's at MarkAdamsHC on both bloody Instagram and Twitter, which I actually quite like. And I've only got one of the podcasts, and you know about that already. It's about Chucky. It's called Chucky Vision, at Chucky Vision on Twitter. And like Colin says, search for it on whatever podcast thing you do. I had a million other podcasts in the past, but I'm not doing them anymore because then people only listen to this one and the one about Chucky. Fuck knows why. They're both really weird.
Bring back Life's Milestones. I loved that one. I don't know fuckers listened to it, but I really liked it.
So much effort. And on that note, yeah, check out Life's Milestones. It was kind of nice. Anyway, thank you for joining us. And until next time.
Can we go now?
Do you believe in the existence of X-Files podcasts? Then the truth is in here. I'm Tony.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Carl.
And I'm R. Muldrake.
And the X-Cast is devoted to all things X-Files, such as in-depth episode discussions.
I love the 8th season being like, no, you're saying goodbye. And that's something pop culture doesn't do enough.
Interviews with many of the cast and crew from the show.
I had to audition repeatedly. I mean, I went in, I read for Chris and Frank. I read for the casting director, Rick. And then I made it past that hurdle and read for Chris and Frank. Had a lovely meeting with them.
And special roundtable chats, commentaries, and fun bonus episodes.
But this is great. Mulder just having no idea what's going on.
On this beautiful boat with people not really speaking English.
You can find us on the We Made This podcast network, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast players.
We'll see you in the basement. But until then,
trust
no
one. Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network.